This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your daily voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Hello, America. This is Ronnie Floyd. I'm the senior pastor of Cross Church in Northwest Arkansas and the immediate past president of the Southern Baptist Convention. I'm sitting in at the desk today for Tony Perkins, who is on a cruise with various supporters of the Family Research Council. So I hope that you'll pray for a restful time for him today and in the coming days. I hope that you'll follow Tony at T Perkins, along the way of Twitter. And also, would you take a moment to follow me on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at Ronnie Floyd. It would be wonderful to stay in touch with you. And thank you for joining us here today. Well, President Trump has signed a Russia sanctions bill, and the U.S. has issued a travel ban to North Korea. Senator John Bozeman, a friend of Arkansas, will join us to discuss the president's full plate of foreign affairs issues. And more documents have now been released concerning the Hillary Clinton email scandal. Tom Fitton, president of a Judicial Watch, would tell us all about it. Well, the president of Southern Methodist University says the American flag could trigger negative effects on students and has banned a 9/11 memorial banning O Gloria. Well, we're going to talk with SMU student Grant Wolf and chairman of the SMU U Americans for Freedom, who is pushing back. It's not getting reported much today, but did you know that the Dow has now hit a record high again? There is other good news, too, since the president has taken office in relationship to various matters. We're going to talk with Ron Martin. Rod is a technology entrepreneur, futurist, hedge fund manager, and thought leader and a conservative activist later on in the program. Well, yesterday, President Trump signed a new Russia sanctions bill. The new sanctions are in response to Moscow's meddling in the presidential election. New sanctions on North Korea and Iran are included in the legislation. Well, with us now is Senator John Bozeman of Arkansas. He is the chairman of the Subcommittee on Homeland Security and decades of experience as a successful healthcare provider and a small business owner. Well, Senator Bozeman, we want to welcome you back to the Washington Watch. We appreciate so much what you're doing to serve our country. But let me ask you right up front, Senator Bozeman. President Trump said he reluctantly signed a Russia sanctions bill this week, calling it seriously flawed. What do you think about those remarks? And he even stated that it's at an all-time and various dangerous low regarding the U.S. relationship with Russia. Senator Bozeman, what are your thoughts about these things?
Hey, Ronnie, thank you so much for having me on, as always, and I certainly appreciate you. This is a very, very good bill. You know, we hear a lot about Congress not getting anything done, and not only is this a very strong bill dealing with Russia, Iran, and North Korea, but it's also a very bipartisan bill and passed Congress overwhelmingly, which is a good thing. I think the president's concern was the fact that traditionally, and it wouldn't matter if it was President Trump or Obama or Bush, they feel like and argue that constitutionally that they simply pretty much have almost full control, great deal of control over foreign affairs. And so the argument is that in order for them to improve things, they need to have leverage. Well, Congress is so upset with Russia, so upset with Iran and North Korea, they basically said, you know, we're tired of this. We want these things done, and wrote it in that manner. So the president, you know, signed the bill, which is a good thing, because we would have, if he had vetoed it, we would have passed it over it. But I'm not surprised that himself and then also the State Department, both the career and the political appointees, you know, had problems with it.
Well, you know, Special Counsel Robert Mueller today has impaneled a grand jury to investigate Russia's meddling in the 2016 election, according to the Wall Street Journal. And the move is seen as a sign that the investigation into the campaign of President Trump is heating up and entering a new phase. Do you know much about this at all, or do you think this is just a part of the process, Senator Bozeman?
No, I think this is just part of the process, Ronnie. And what I want, I know what you want, and the rest of the country is, you know, is a full, impartial evaluation. We're a nation of laws. None of us are above the law.
Absolutely.
And so, you know, we've got this investigation going on. We've also got the investigation going on by Senator Burr, who's chairman of the Senate Intelligence Committee, and then a number of other things going on in the House. So all trying to get to the bottom of, you know, the various phases of this. Mm. And the main thing is it just needs to be fair, and they need to, you know, they need to follow it where it runs. But they also need to follow it not only on the Republican side, but also on the Democrat side. If it leads to Hillary and places like that, then they need to do a good job of tracking that down also. And I think there is a concern that perhaps we haven't done a good job of holding you know, that group accountable as we should.
Yes. Well, you know, your colleague, Senator Graham, thinks that the United States has an option now to launch a preemptive strike on North Korea. Obviously, there's so much on the desk of the foreign relationships today and all that's going on. We're in a very dangerous and critical hour in our country. What are your thoughts about the North Korea situation and even in regard to what Senator Graham brought up earlier?
Well, it's really a difficult situation. You've got China sitting there, and I'm pleased that the president is really leaning on them, trying to get them to play a bigger role. North Korea has very little factory capacity or anything like that. All of their energy supplies and stuff needs to come in, their food, and a lot of that comes through China. So they really can ratchet down more if they would. As far as a preemptive strike, we could do that, but then you've got a situation where China would have perhaps, excuse me, several hundred thousand, even more so, refugees showing up on their border. They're very concerned about that. They're concerned about the reunification of the North and the South, if the North were overthrown. So, and the list goes on and on. On the other hand, you can't have a full-fledged nuclear North Korea. I'm afraid you're going to have nuclear proliferation. The South Koreans are very, very nervous about that. There would be a good chance that they would go nuclear. Japan also, Taiwan. What we don't need is nuclear proliferation in Asia. Mm-hmm. So the stakes are high. There's no easy situation, but this is something that we need to be talking to our allies about, talking to the continuing, you know, to put pressure on China, also talking to South Korea and Japan that are right there in the area. So, again, there's no easy answer. On the other hand, we can't have a situation where they're able to send ballistic missiles our way.
Yes, that's correct. Well, in relationship to Iran, Iran has even stated that they are willing to retaliate against the U.S. sanctions that have been signed into law on Wednesday, arguing that they break the terms of the nuclear deal it reached with Washington and other powers. Well, do you believe Iran will retaliate, Senator Bozeman?
Yeah, you know, I don't know if they will or not. To be honest, I don't trust them as far as I can throw them. This deal is such that after a decade, they can pretty much do whatever they want to do from a nuclear standpoint. What we've done is legitimize their, at that point, you know, we legitimize them becoming a nuclear power. As I said about Asia, you've got the same situation there. If they go nuclear, then Saudi Arabia is going to want to go nuclear. Turkey's going to want to go nuclear. And the list goes on and on because they're scared to death of the, you know, you've got the religious faction, but also you've got the huge enmity through the years and I know that, that you realize this better than anybody, as a biblical scholar and just a scholar in general of history, just the enmity between the Arab nations and the Persians. They're scared to death of them. So this is another hot spot. But I'm for, you know, the sanctions. I voted for it. Congress overwhelmingly voted for it. We need to hold them accountable.
Absolutely. Well, I know that you're also involved in this comprehensive GI reform package bill that's going on. Can you tell us a little bit about that, Senator?
Yeah, no, this is something, Ronnie, that's so important. You know, these are things that really do make a big difference in people's lives. In the mid-2000s, we were able to revamp the GI Bill and make it so much better, so much more helpful to the average veteran. And so what we're doing now, what we've just done that's going to get signed in the next few days, is tweaking that. And there were things like, you know, if you say you were injured, say you were a Purple Heart recipient, normally you have to be in the service for 3 years. Well, say you got shot, you know, within a year. You still deserve the fact that you, you know, that you paid that kind of price for your country. You deserve not only a Purple Heart, but you also deserve the GI Bill. So we fixed that. There was another situation regarding a similar thing where if you were in the Guard or Reserve, if you got injured, and then they didn't count your healing time, you know, towards. So lots of these kind of things. The world has changed a lot since the mid-2000s, and so we were able to actually insert an amendment that had to do with making it easier to get the certificates for things like coding, you know, cyber type things that hadn't been included in the past because they weren't part of our society back then. So it's just a good cleanup of the GI Bill. And the other thing, Ronnie, that again is so important, you know, we hear a lot about simply not being able to get anything done. This was a very, very bipartisan effort.
That's great.
And so, you know, it got done, and it's good for our men and women that have served or are serving our country right now.
Yeah, I'm sure that all the things that you do get done that are bipartisan, you guys probably and ladies would love to be able to shout to America, hey, we do things together. Nobody just gets to talk about those always, do they?
No, that's exactly right. We're people are real loggerheads when it comes down to budgeting, you know, how you spend money.
Sure.
You know, growing government, not growing government, you know, those kind of things. And then healthcare, you know, certainly there's a real difference of opinion in regard to that. Many of my colleagues on the other side want to push it more towards a single payer. In other words, to fix Obamacare with more Obamacare. That doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, that's right. Well, thank you, Senator Bozeman, for what you're doing in the country. Thanks for being on the Washington Watch today. We really do appreciate you very much.
Well, appreciate you. Appreciate your friendship and all you do for Arkansas.
Well, coming up next on the Washington Watch, a conservative watchdog group has released over 1,600 documents finding Huma Abedin sent classified information over unsecured networks and the Clinton Foundation donors potentially receiving special treatment from the State Department. Well, we're going to talk with Judicial Watch President Tom Fitton when we return on the Washington Watch.
Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of American Family Association and American Family Radio. One of the places we visit on one of the days on our tour of Israel is the Shepherd's Fields. Now, this is a place in Bethlehem. You can look out on any given day and see shepherds with their sheep as if it were 2,000 years ago during the birth of Christ. So that's a very special place that we visit. Yeah, the terrain would be the same. You can just picture yourself being there the night the angels sang about the glory of the coming of the Lord. That's just one of the places we visit on one of the days. So if you would like to join us on our March 8th through the 16th tour of Israel, we'd love to have you. Just go to the website, twholyland.com, for more information. twholyland.com. Or for a free brochure sent to you in the mail, call us at 800-FAMILIES. That's 1-800-FAMILIES, F-A-M-I-L-I-E-S, option 5.
Here for your encouragement and your walk with God, this is David Wolin with Haven Ministries, inviting you to anchor your day in God's Word. Peter and John were standing up in front of the very men who had condemned Jesus to the cross. And for all they knew, they were next. They had just healed a lame man, and the Jewish leaders wanted to know how. Peter and John could have remained silent or given a vague, evasive answer, but instead, they said, "It is by the name of Jesus Christ of Nazareth, whom you crucified, but whom God raised from the dead." And then, even bolder, they said, "Salvation is found in no one else, for there is no name under heaven given to mankind by which we must be saved." It took courage to speak the truth about Jesus, and it still does today. Get daily encouragement for your walk with God with Anchor Devotional. Visit getanchor.com.
We are not allowed to have a U-Haul that comes to heaven with us.
Anna Marie Travers has an AFA Foundation charitable gift annuity.
The Lord has given us things that we can acquire, but you know, everything will stay here. And I'm so thankful for the American Family Annuity Fund, where we can give some to something that we so highly value.
Through the AFA Foundation, a charitable gift annuity provides a monthly income as well as a legacy of support for the American Family Association.
I cannot recommend a better person than they have at AFA to help you with getting your annuity fund. It was so easy.
Call the AFA Foundation today to find out how you can set up a charitable gift annuity. Just call 800-326-4543, extension 345.
Welcome back on the Washington Watch. This is Ronnie Floyd sitting in for Tony Perkins today. The Washington, D.C.-based Judicial Watch released yesterday 1,606 pages of documents from the United States Department of State revealing repeated use of unsecured communications for classified information and numerous examples of Clinton Foundation donors receiving special favors from former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton's staff. Well, with us now is Tom Fitton, who is the president of Judicial Watch. Well, Tom, we want to welcome you to the Washington Watch, and I really believe your organization has single-handedly almost kept this topic alive. Why don't you tell us about your recent findings?
Well, they're really extraordinary. They're new emails from, thank you for the good word, by the way. They're new emails from Yuma Abedin, who was a Clinton top advisor in the State Department, who had an email account on Mrs. Clinton's illicit server. So we've been getting these emails, and they show that Abedin was a way station for Clinton Foundation favors for their donors. So you had Clinton Foundation officials and other donors to Mrs. Clinton communicating with Abedin. At one point, the foundation was pushing along a request for an ambassadorial appointment on behalf of a major Clinton Foundation donor. So that is obviously really troubling. And on top of that, as you alluded to in the beginning of your intro, the regular and repeated use of these email systems, which weren't secure, they weren't governmental, to communicate classified information, we see it time and time again. You name it, the country, China in this case, you had classified information being communicated on these systems. And you know that in my view, is an absolute violation of the law. And this is why the Justice Department needs to take a look at these and other emails to decide whether they're finally going to investigate this for real for the first time.
How were these documents obtained?
Well, we sued for them. We sued for the Ms. Abedin's emails that she had on non-governmental systems. And this is... It's taken months and, frankly, well over a year plus to get access to all this information. And we still don't have all of them.
Hmm. Well, Tom, I know that you have obviously gone through all those documents, or at least most of those documents, and when you really think through it and putting it in perhaps a layperson's mindset where they could understand it, who might be listening today and they're affiliated with it, they understand it a little bit, but would you just kind of really get it down in the terminology of what are one or two or three things that are just really troubling that is apparently evident through these documents?
Well, the first thing to remember is Mrs. Clinton was Secretary of State, one of the most sensitive positions in government, our lead diplomatic representative with foreign nations and such. And in order to become Secretary of State, she promised she'd stay out of Clinton Foundation business. You know, Bill Clinton was traveling the world making speeches. The Clinton Foundation was operating in other countries. And of course, you've got these rules as a result of her being such a sensitive position, sort of handling and protecting classified information, material that, if released, would negatively harm our national security. So instead of following the rules and breaking and keeping her promises about the Clinton Foundation, she used a separate email system that was not on the government system to do her business, the people's business, which include mishandling classified information, putting that at risk, putting our national security at risk, and then allowing her State Department to be operated as a favor bank for the Clinton Foundation's donors. All things she promised would never happen.
Mm. Well, Tom, let me ask you this question. What's next? I mean, will the administration, will the Justice Department, do you believe, pursue an investigation into the Clinton Foundation and Secretary Clinton? Or what are your thoughts on that based off what you know today?
Well, I hope so. I think the Justice Department's kind of like frozen in place at this time. Mm-hmm. And hopefully there'll be a critical mass of documents and public pressure. I know members of Congress has asked for additional investigations. And the more and more that comes out, they may have no choice but to reopen or reinvigorate or just keep, maybe they're doing it quietly, just keep on working on them.
Mm. Well, Tom, tell us about the Judicial Watch. Tell us about what you're doing. Tell us about your organization, what it's about, so people will know even more about you and about what's going on that all that you guys are involved in.
Sure. Judicial Watch is a nonprofit educational foundation, and we're a government watchdog group. We use the law to investigate and figure out what the government's up to, focused on combating government corruption and trying to expose and stop it. So we use the Freedom of Information Act to investigate government activities, mm-hmm. and sometimes we sue government officials directly when they break the law. And we've used the open records law to get access to information about Clinton's emails. We're the group that discovered it. We broke open the Benghazi scandal, the IRS scandal, the Obama IRS abuse scandal, and so many other issues. And right now we're tackling the issue of the deep state attacks on Donald Trump, focusing on going after sanctuary cities, and also trying to ensure our elections are clean and fair, meaning by attacking voter fraud and the government policies that lead to it.
And in these final seconds that we have together, Tom, then how do you determine what is priority and what you go after in your organization?
I like to joke we investigate everything. But we try to figure out what's important by following our instincts. We've been doing this here for a long time at Judicial Watch. And, we listen and watch, and after you do this long enough, you kind of know where the bodies are buried and where, at least where you think they might be buried and where to look and what questions to ask.
Well, Tom, thank you again for being on the Washington Watch today, and we hope to talk to you again.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Well, coming up next here on the Washington Watch, can you believe this? Southern Methodist University has banned a 9/11 memorial that would display American flags, claiming the university wants to avoid messages that are triggering, harmful, or harassing. Now think about that. We're talking about where President George W. Bush has his presidential library, and this is going on. Well, SMU student and chairman of Young Americans for Freedom, Grant Wolf, is going to be here in a moment, and we're going to hear what is going on at SMU.
Making the most of your money. Here's Dan Celia.
Do you lease a car or purchase a car? That's a good question, and it's one that is always asked. But look, here's the deal on a car. If you lease a car, it's a wonderful thing. You don't have to take the money out of your savings to put down. You can just walk in, get the lease. Sometimes the payment is pretty reasonable. And you can drive the car as long as you don't drive a lot, because if you put a lot of miles on a car, a lease is not even an option. Here's my take on it. You buy it and drive it till it turns to the dust. So if you're going to drive it till it turns to dust, then you need a car, obviously, that's going to last a long time. And you need a car that you don't have to turn in at the end of 5 years to get a new one, so that you are perpetually paying some sort of car payment for the rest of your life. Purchase a car. Purchase a used car, whatever it takes. But obviously, the ideal thing is to purchase a car that is one that you can pay for almost in cash or in cash and keep it as long as you possibly can. That makes the most sense, in my opinion. I like the idea of someday getting rid of a car payment. If you do have to finance it, at least there's a light at the end of the tunnel. In a lease, there is no light. The only thing that you have to look forward to is taking on another new payment. Yes, you get a new car, but you also get a new payment. You never get ahead. You never gain more discretionary income that you can spend or save because you have that payment. Purchase a car, pay your payments, and at the end, keep it as long as you possibly can.
Experience Dan Celia in person. Find a faith, family, and finance town hall meeting or seminar near you at afafoundation.net.
Welcome back to the Washington Watch. There is a dust up at Southern Methodist University over the American flag. SMU Young Americans for Freedom wants to post nearly 3,000 American flags on a prominent campus lawn in honor of 9/11, but administrators are banning the memorial. And joining us now is Grant Wolf. He's a senior at Southern Methodist University. He's the chairman and founder of SMU's Young Americans for Freedom. He is pursuing a finance and music double major. And coincidentally, we're talking with Grant in Washington, D.C. as he attends the 39th Annual National Conservative Student Conference hosted by Young Americans Foundation. Grant, welcome to the Washington Watch.
Good evening, sir. Thanks so much for having me on.
Hey, Grant, it's my understanding that you're only asking for small flags to be planted in the ground for less than 24 hours to honor those who lost their lives on 9/11. What problem do people have with that at SMU?
Well, the problem is that the university has instituted a new policy which prescribes that displays of the kind that we want to do with flags or displays that other organizations have done with crosses or other things can no longer take place on this lawn on campus. And they have said that they need to instead happen on another lawn that's further away from the center of campus. That this just simply does not receive the foot traffic or visibility of the lawn where we want to do our display and where we've done it for 2 years.
Have you had any conversation with SMU President Gerald Turner over this issue, or have you been talking to other people in the administration?
I, as well as leaders of several other organizations on campus, submitted a letter to the president. I also submitted on behalf of Young Americans for Freedom my own personal statement to him with the same effect, or to the same effect, that we want him to overturn the policy. I have not personally received a correspondence from the president. I've received correspondence from several other administration officials saying they'd be willing to discuss However, they were not currently going to change the policy.
Well, how have the students of SMU responded to the request of having flags on display? Are they willing for that? Do they want that? Or is there a debate about even that among the student body?
Oh, no, there's no debate whatsoever. Doing a memorial for Americans who lost their lives on 9/11 is unobjectionable. And I think that's why you've seen so broad of media coverage on this issue, from the Washington Post to Governor Greg Abbott and Senator Ted Cruz today adding their support.
Is
because, you know, this is, this is the American flag, and this is your Americans who lost their lives. And you've also seen very diverse student groups on campus lend their support, from the college Democrats to the college Republicans. So the student body is pretty unified on this issue. It really is our administration that has changed the policy and is standing by their guns, and we continue to urge them to change their mind.
Well, Grant, I want to thank you for having the courage to lead the way in that, and I'm really glad to know the student body is pretty well together over this issue. I mean, it's pretty troubling when we think about being able to be in the state of Texas, a strong conservative state, and being on a university like SMU and not being able to do what you're asking to be done. I mean, think about it. You're talking about President George W. Bush Presidential Library is on that campus, the 9/11 president. That's just a little extreme to me. What about you? Do you think that?
Yeah, and I think it's very telling that the university is not allowing the display to happen in unarguably the most prominent place on campus, in front of the very first building that SMU was founded at Dallas Hall. Mm. You know, again, it's the most visible place where thousands of students walk by every single day, and where displays that we have put up and other student organizations have put up have generated some really tremendous conversation about important political issues. And I just think it's very telling that the university is looking to move that kind of dialogue and display to a less prominent location.
I'm speaking with Grant Wolf, a student at SMU in Dallas, Texas. And Grant, let me ask you this final question. We have just about a minute left in this segment. But what is so triggering about the American flag? I mean, this is astounding to me. I'm a Texan. I'm an American. I just don't get it. Help me out.
There shouldn't be anything triggering about the American flag. It's the greatest symbol of freedom in the history of the world. It's brought freedom from more people than any other icon or symbol in the rest of the world besides the cross of Jesus Christ. And I think that there really should be no controversy about this. And I think that this is emblematic of a larger discussion about free speech on college campuses. And we want to see our university make a bold stand for freedom of speech, in contrast to some of the nonsense we've seen nationwide. So that's why we're pushing so hard to encourage our administration to overturn this policy, so that we can all join together in making a bold stand to embrace debate and dialogue and freedom of speech and be a beacon of freedom in our nation.
Well, I tell you what, Grant Wolf, you're a great encouragement. He's the founder and the chairman of the Young Americans for Freedom at SMU, and we need to get behind him. And thank you for standing strongly, and thank you for being on the Washington Watch and for holding up the American flag in a great way, the greatest symbol of freedom other than the cross of Jesus Christ. Listen, don't go away. In a moment, we're going to be coming back with technology entrepreneurs, futurist author, and conservative activist. A man named Rod Martin will join us to discuss the skyrocketing stock market, some policies that's going on in Washington, and many other things. We'll be back in a moment.
With a Republican president in office, we should be confident that our religious liberties are secure, right? Well, think again. As violations of religious liberty continue to occur in our military, FRC recognized the need to account for anti-religious actions taken by armed forces and the Veterans Administration. In just one recent example, the West Point's football team incurred the wrath of the anti-religious left when they prayed after a win, even though the prayer was completely voluntary and supported by the players themselves. Unfortunately, this situation is one of the many similar incidents in recent years. Only time will tell how the Trump administration will deal with attacks against religious liberty. Learn more about how our men and women in uniform are encountering difficulty in expressing their faith. Go to frc.org/danger for real stories of how our military service members are fighting for the very rights that thousands of their predecessors fought and died for on the battlefield.
Did you know there are 9,000 year-round volunteers serving with Operation Christmas Child nationwide? That's right, and local teams are still growing as God calls new volunteers to directly connect with His global purposes. As part of a local team, how would you like to invest your time, skills, and passions so that millions of children can receive a gift of love and a message of hope? To learn more about volunteer opportunities in your area or to apply, visit samaritanspurse.org/volunteerwithocc.
Unwholesome television programs and unnatural social agendas. As believers, we use our religious freedoms to take out the trash in the media and society. Even children's magazines are in the crosshairs. Join 1millionmoms.com and take action.
This is Monica Cole of 1 Million Moms. We need you to sign up and speak up for our children at 1millionmoms.com. We are making the difference.
When Becky Thompson went through a miscarriage, a coding error on her hospital bill denoted an elective abortion. Hi, Kim Cotola for Cradle My Heart Today. In striving to correct the record, Becky says she realized abortion wasn't just a word that was mistakenly used in place of my miscarriage. It's the word that has changed the discussion of miscarriage altogether. The resulting silence, she says, has been heavily influenced by abortion rhetoric, which refuses to acknowledge that abortion equals the death of a baby. Becky wrote on her blog that it's time to start the conversation, saying it's time to change the discussion of miscarriage by starting one. Time to acknowledge the loss of neonatal life as life. Time to stop expecting women and men who've experienced miscarriage to stay silent in their own pain. Find out more about Becky's story and her ministry today at CradleMyHeart.org. Saving lives and healing hearts after abortion, one story at a time. CradleMyHeart.org.
As we turn into the final segment of today's edition of the Washington Watch, I'm going to welcome in a moment to this broadcast Rod Martin, who is the founder and CEO of the Martin Organization. He is a technology entrepreneur, futurist, author, and conservative activist. Well, Rod, you're a friend, and I want to welcome you to the Washington Watch today.
Well, Ronnie, I'm happy to be anywhere you are.
Well, you're very kind, my friend, and we really are glad that you're with us today. You know, so many negative things are said about what's happening, Rod, across America, and I know we're in challenging times. That's undeniable, and we need to find a way to come together on as many things as possible, and hopefully all things. But in relationship to that, how about the trading on Wall Street? I mean, the Dow Jones Industrial Average hit 22,000 mark for the first time. I mean, what are your thoughts about this?
It is like a great weight has been lifted off of a spring. We had, speaking both politically and as manager of a hedge fund, I mean, I'm looking at this from both directions.
Yes.
We have long been pricing into the market a terrible weight on economic growth, which is the hyper-regulatory state and the likely tax increases and other just nightmare of 16 potential years of Obama-Clinton. And when suddenly that was no longer a factor, you see what's happened. We don't just have a 20% increase. That's 20% of the entire market capitalization of the Dow Jones is since 9 November. I mean, it's just incredible. So you have this record on the Dow. You have multiple records on the Dow in the last little bit. But also, consumer confidence is at a record. Hiring is up. Unemployment is at its lowest rate in a decade, which is another way of saying job creation is off the chart. in every possible sector, in every possible economic indicator, you just have this shocking burst of energy, again, like a weight lifted off a spring. And if we can follow through on the president's tax policy in particular, but also Obamacare repeal, which may take a little bit longer. We had a disappointment last week, but there are things that can still be done in the short term and more things that can probably be done after next November. That's going to lead to a tremendous amount of economic growth, too. And I would suggest Donald Trump's goal of 3% economic growth in the relatively near term is very realistic. But if we can pass that legislation, especially the tax reform, if we can do that, we could be looking at growth that looks very favorable even in comparison to China.
Yes, well, that's pretty amazing, Rod. Well, let me ask you this, and because you've been around this field, obviously, for a number of years. Have you ever seen the stock market so greatly influenced by an administration in a positive way? And a part of that question would also be, is it really the administration influencing it, or is it someone else?
It's the lack of the administration the market thought would be there, which is just staggering. Because, I mean, you remember how it was. We're going into November 8th, and you've got Nobel Prize winner Paul Krugman at the New York Times assuring us literally that if Donald Trump is elected, markets will literally never recover, which obviously is 180 degrees from the truth, just as was the case when he made similar predictions and all of the left-wing economists made similar predictions about Brexit. They are perfectly happy to tell you what they want you to think, regardless of whether it's true, to achieve the political end they are after. And we have seen that again and again and again. It is the absence of a Clinton presidency that is driving this. When Donald Trump is able to complete his economic agenda, it'll be because of him. But I must give him a little bit of credit. This president and this Congress have done more to slash the regulatory burden on American industry in the last 6 months than at any time in memory. There was a period under Reagan when it was similarly good, but it's been that long, and you can't really find another example since before the Great Depression. That has had a tremendous impact on a lot of sectors, and you also see the president's push for not energy independence, not reducing dependence on foreign oil. No, the word today is energy dominance, and we are up double from where we were 10 years ago in terms of daily production. We were at 5 million barrels a day. We're now at 10 million barrels a day. Nobody believed we would ever see 5 million again. They thought we'd just drop until we ran completely out. Now we're at 10 million barrels a day, and we're actually able to pick up the slack for a lot of the OPEC countries like Venezuela that we may be blockading. We're competing with them in foreign turf, not just here. That's money coming into America instead of going out. It is a total game changer globally.
Well, let me ask you, Rod, you mentioned this a moment ago about the healthcare crisis last week and the disappointment relating to us not being able to come together on that in Washington. But do you think that Republicans can come together on that? I mean, or do you think that's just something that is just never going to change over the next course of years?
We're fighting for it, and we're going to change it. And look, in two parts, it is very clear which Republicans we need to focus fire on. It's not the House Republicans. The House passed a good bill. It's not the best bill in history, but it needed to be a bill that could get through the reconciliation process. And so that limits what they can do, given that we have 52 senators and not 60 or 68. So with that in mind, the House passed a good bill. The Senate came within one vote of passing a good bill. John McCain sold us out, as he is prone to do. He's been doing a great job of selling out his own team for as long as I can remember. So what else is new? But let's not limit it to McCain. Lisa Murkowski ran on repeal and replace. Lisa Murkowski voted for the 2015 bill, which she then voted against. So it's not just one of them, it's two of them. We expect Susan Collins to be off the reservation. But still, Ronnie, that means not the Republican, not even the Senate Republican, not even the Republican leaders. No, two senators. Two senators betrayed the American people and broke their promises that they'd made over and over and over again. So, with that in mind, you got two people you need to focus fire on. Some of the others are squishy, but two of them, in the end, betrayed us. So, with that in mind, in 2018, the Democrats are defending 25 Senate seats. 10 of them are in states Donald Trump won. The Republicans are only having to defend 8 seats. We're going to have a bunch of pickups unless we completely blow it. And yeah, we're Republicans, so we probably will blow it, but I don't think we can blow it enough to stop us from picking up a bunch of Senate seats. If we only pick up one or two, and the potential could be, I was talking to Richard Viguerie the other day, he thinks at the outside we could pick up 10 or 12 even. If we could get anywhere in that range, health care is a done deal, and we're going to actually institute real free market reform, not just back to the status quo, Andy, something actually good and indeed much, much better than we had before Obama.
Well, Rod, in relationship to 2018, because you turned this to 2018, of which I did want to go to, and there's so much discussion already about 2018 and all the elections there. And in relationship, I want you to really go back and think through and break this down again for what people see and what could potentially happen in relationship to the 2018 election, because obviously there are many people believing that the Republicans have had their day and it's going to be done, that the Democrats and others are going to come and take America where they desire for it to be. But you're saying something completely different, of which many people believe as well. So help us understand this over the next couple of minutes together.
Well, let's just start with the obvious. We're picking up another governor today. We have the overwhelming majority of governors, and the governor of West Virginia is switching parties. It was just announced he's going to be switching to Republican at a big Trump rally. We broke, probably irrevocably, the blue wall. We picked up last November Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Wisconsin. Hillary Clinton was so certain of those states that she did not even campaign in Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. We could easily pick up 3 to 6 more states in 2020, assuming we don't blow it. The demographics are there. The Democrats have been talking about demography being destiny for years now, and they counted their chickens before they hatched. But those demographics depend on a level of illegal immigration that simply is not happening now. Under Donald Trump, illegal border crossings are down 73%. ICE arrests are up 38%. That's before one inch of wall has been built. So if you take away their ability to replace all of the voters that they aborted over my lifetime, because that's really what they're having to do. They're desperate for immigration to replace all of their own children whom they killed. And without those votes from outside the country, they can't possibly effectuate a takeover. But right now, we dominate state houses, state senate, governor's mansions. We have both houses of Congress, and that just doesn't look like the end of the Republican Party to me. Now, are people upset over the health care vote? Absolutely. But people are smart, and they're going to figure out that that's John McCain and Lisa Murkowski. And if we can come back through and pass really serious tax reform, which I believe we will do, and I know the leadership in both houses are serious about that, it's going to unleash economic growth like nobody's seen. And all of a sudden we're liable to have a Republican wave here.
Well, tax reform could really be a game changer, and it would be wonderful if we could find a way for all of our leadership to work together, because that really does come down to one thing ultimately, and that is really helping the American people, because that's where people live, and that's what really affects their lives. And in relationship to that, I mean, think about it this way, Rod. I mean, we're talking about the immigration policy now, or the reform that was released yesterday, the possibility of that. We're talking about what we've already talked about regarding health care and then the entire tax reform issue. I mean, do you really believe that's going to affect the nation positively or negatively? Can that much legislation agenda exist and be successful? Because that's been a part of the discussion today already in the country since yesterday's release of the immigration reform.
Well, as far as tax reform, yes, I think we can get it done. I don't know if we will get it done quite on the president's term. That would be wonderful if we could, because what that would do, and I know you don't have time to get into the weeds on this, but the effective result of that would be most Americans paying a 15% tax rate, which is just extraordinary. It would unleash economic growth like we have never seen, and ironically, mm-hmm. it would probably increase federal tax revenues, although you'd never hear that from the Congressional Budget Office. But as far as immigration reform, two things. In the short term, will that pass? No, I don't think so, because, again, we don't have the votes in the Senate to pass it. But on the other side, for years, I mean, for the better part of a decade, all we heard was John McCain's comprehensive immigration reform legislation. That's all we heard, and they made three different runs at passing it, plus several half-hearted attempts by Obama. And that defined the debate for years. And basically, it was a giant amnesty bill and an open invitation to whosoever will to show up and live on welfare. And make no mistake, 50% of immigrants in America today live on welfare, which is just abominable. What the president just did was propose a system that is merit-based. If you speak English, you have a better chance of getting in. If you bring a skill, if you bring investment, if you bring something to the table, but above all, if you have the ability to support yourself when you get here, we will let you in. And otherwise, well, you're going to be a little bit further back in the line. That's how it ought to be. That's what's good for the American people. And the people who are already here deserve to have their interests looked out for first. So will that pass immediately? No. But just like McCain's bill last decade, this will be the new starting point on the debate. Mm. And perhaps we will pass it in a year or two or three.
Yes, well, Rod, you've done an outstanding job today, and thank you so much for your comments. And I want to thank all of you today for watching or to participate on the Washington Watch with us today. It has been a joy to be able to be with you this week, and I really want to encourage you to tune in tomorrow. And I really hope that we will also be reminded of the importance to pray for our country, pray for the future of our country, and pray for the leaders of our nation. And I want to encourage you again to always pray for the Washington Watch, the Family Research Council, as we stand for faith, family, and freedom.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.